In his political heyday, Haig ruled his city so absolutely that it was a matter of indisputable fact rather than boasting when he declared, "I am the law."
For better or for worse, "I am the law" became Frank Haig's middle name. Opponents, including the New York newspapers, saw it as arrogance. However, historian Thomas Fleming says Haig's words were taken out of context.
It was a bum rap. It had to do with a juvenile delinquent who had done something very naughty and was going to be sent to jail. Now, Haig had been a juvenile delinquent himself, and he had had a program for juvenile delinquency, which was rather progressive, as a matter of fact. So he wanted this kid to go into that program. And there was some technicality. I think the kid was too old to fit the legal age of being a juvenile, although he obviously was. And they said, "In this case, the law says you can't do that." And Haig said, "In this case, I am the law." And the kid went into the program and he didn't go to jail.
Whether or not Frank Haig was the law, even presidents recognized his power. Franklin Delano Roosevelt came to depend on Haig to deliver huge pluralities in New Jersey. But the relationship between Frank Haig and Roosevelt got off firmly on the wrong foot.
"I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. This is more than a political campaign. It is a call to arms. Give me your help not to win votes alone, but to win in this crusade to restore America to its own people."
Frank Haig did not give FDR his help at first. Right up to FDR's acceptance speech at the 1932 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Haig supported FDR's rival, former governor of New York, Al Smith, who knew the plight of the Irish firsthand.
"The Irish who came to New York came here to escape poverty and to enjoy the privilege of freedom of worship. They brought with them strong traditions, warm family loyalties, and as lively an imagination as any people on earth. They found prejudices when they came. When they looked for jobs, they would often find signs that read, 'No Irish need apply.'"
He really loved Al Smith.
Thomas Fleming.
If there was one politician who deeply moved Frank Haig, it was Al Smith. And he resented terribly the fact that Al Smith wasn't elected president in 1928, although he had a tremendous record as governor of New York for four terms, progressive governor, and so forth. He didn't get elected because he was a Catholic, and that really infuriated Haig.
Haig, who served as Al Smith's floor manager at the Democratic National Convention, fought FDR to the end, but not the bitter end.
Haig went to Roosevelt and said, "I want to show you my loyalty."
Political scientist Lyle W. Dorsett of Wheaton College.
"You come and do your first speech as the Democratic nominee in New Jersey, and we'll turn out the largest crowd that's ever been turned out for any presidential nominee."
So Haig, showing his resourcefulness, put on a rally down in Seagirt, which is famous in the history of New Jersey politics.
Again, Thomas Fleming.
"He put half of Jersey City on trains, and he brought 100,000 people, at least that's the official figure down there, and Roosevelt came and looked out at the sea of faces and suddenly decided maybe Frank Haig wasn't such a bad guy after all, even if he had stuck with Al Smith.
Frank Haig delivered New Jersey to FDR, and he expected something in return. This was the depths of the Great Depression. For New Jersey, Haig demanded jobs, and he got them. Lyle Dorsett.
"Frank Haig distributed between 76 and 97,000 jobs a year through WPA in the state of New Jersey. I found letters that Governor A. Harry Moore wrote when people would write him and say, 'I want a WPA job.' He had a standard form letter. He said, 'You got to talk to Frank Haig. He's the man in charge of this.'"
Haig used the federal money pouring into New Jersey not just for jobs, but for projects that would benefit his city. The Parthenon of public works was the Jersey City Medical Center, built by the Works Progress Administration.
The WPA built the Jersey City Medical Center, which is a gigantic hospital.
Tom Fleming.
Much too big for the city of Jersey City. But this was, I think, a sort of a part of Haig's, an idiosyncrasy of Haig. He was a health fanatic, and he was very proud of the fact that he was going to get the best medical care possible for the people of Jersey City, and he made that a big part of his party platform. You know, was he got top doctors from around the country and paid them very good salaries. And he boasted that anybody that went there and they couldn't afford it, it was on Jersey City.
Also, they built, with federal money, a ballpark, a first-class stadium for the Jersey City Giants.
Political scientist Richard Connors.
If we think of the 1930s, professional baseball was the sport. And Frank Haig was always there on opening day to throw out the first ball. The banners were there. It was a Jersey City celebration. And he, Frank Haig, with the help of Franklin Roosevelt and the Democratic Party, had provided this monument for Jersey City baseball.
The Depression, of course, made such a scar on people.
Barbara Petrick.
I don't think my mother ever felt secure. My father did. He didn't ever care about tomorrow. She was the one who worried all the time and complained that my father never cared about tomorrow. But that's just how he was. And the Depression hit Jersey City hard. And Haig took care of a lot of people during those hard years, and they didn't forget it. You know, I think it meant a lot to them.